Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to a very special, very Christmassy episode of Loose Units. We are taking a break from work cover and we're going to be celebrating Christmas with you, our listeners. So, Dad, how are you feeling this very festive day?
I feel jolly.
Yep.
And happy.
You don't look it. I mean...
No, I laugh inside a lot.
Right, yeah.
No, I'm really happy. I'm stoked.
I think that's an arrhythmia. Anyway, look, I wanted to kick this Christmas episode off with something very, very special. Now, Tegan brought this to my attention a couple of months back. This is from a listener, and this is a story that she sent for us, but I wanted to save it for this Christmas episode. So I'm now going to read you what she sent to us. Hi, Paul and John. Just listening to your latest podcast from Hoi An in Vietnam. Loving your work. Can I tell you both something funny? Aside from loving your broadcasts, I use you guys as a security measure when my husband travels for work. We live in a quiet part of Hoi An, but there is a ridiculously high rate of break-ins to expat homes. Case in point, we've been broken into 4 times in the last 8 months and had several attempted break-ins at night. So what I often do is close all the curtains, leave a light on in the living room, and stream you two through a portable speaker to give the impression that there's two men talking in the house. And it bloody well works. The only downside is the elderly couple next door got to thinking that when Rob, my husband, is away, I'm hosting strange men in our home. Double-edged sword. Anyway, thank you from Vietnam. Cheers, Jen Fitzgerald.
Story.
Isn't that great? That's
incredible. So lovely.
Oh my God. Well, we hope you're having a great Christmas, Jen.
I hope we get a royalty for that every time she plays it.
Right, every time we foil a robbery?
Yeah, like a part commission.
Oh, sure.
That's an idea.
All right, we'll give her our PayPal details. It's totally fine. Anyway, as part of this Christmas episode, I actually wanted to give Mum a call. Is that okay?
Fantastic.
All right, here we go.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Please, everyone, give a big hand wherever you are to star of the two-part of Mum's the Word on Loose Units, Christine Verhoeven. Mum, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, except for the very smoky conditions in Sydney today. They're absolutely appalling. So, yes.
Okay.
And of course, yeah, there we go. But as far as the podcast go, I really enjoyed telling stories and, of course, now, since the podcast, I've managed to think about quite a few more stories that I never got to tell.
Oh, my God. Because we were so worried that you wouldn't, because you just seemed to imply that you're, you know, it wasn't a big deal what you did, and there wasn't that much to talk about. But the second I got you in front of the microphone, you just completely went off and told your own stories. Have you, what did it feel like to listen to yourself talking about being in the police force?
It didn't sound like me when I first listened to the first podcast. I thought, gosh, it's me, but just because your own perception of how your voice sounds, and I don't often listen to myself speaking, so it was good. And I was quite, and I don't actually remember a lot of what I said in detail, in fine detail. I remember the stories that I touched on, but I don't remember all that fine detail. So I was obviously in the zone.
So, I mean, you've just implied a bunch of new stories. Does that mean you want to come back and do another episode, or are you happy to let that?
I don't know. I might just have to wait and see.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Given that you're here and Dad's here, I was wondering if the two of you wanted to maybe talk about what it was like to grow up in the Verhoeven household and do Christmas, because this is a Christmas episode. So what was it like? What was Christmas like for the two of you with me as a kid?
Well, Paul, you were very demanding. Like a nightmare child. If you were to do a documentary on, you know, and you wouldn't go to sleep.
Right.
And we always got you very complicated toys that sort of involved a lot of preparation in putting them together.
Right.
So Mum and I would sort of drug you three kids with Valium, which didn't work.
Sure.
And not true, not true, not true.
No, no, no. But, and then Christine would always make me eat a lot of weird stuff that when you kids woke up in the morning, it looked as though Santa had been there.
When you say weird stuff, I assume Mum...
Cookies and milk, stuff that I don't particularly...
It's not weird.
Yeah, but I, looking back, I probably should have just thrown them away.
Right.
But morally, I thought I really should, because I don't like wastage. That sounds weird, but yeah.
So hang on, Mum, was it your idea to have Santa Claus, I'm doing rabbit fingers, was it your idea to have Dad's Santa eat part of the cookies and drink part of the milk and leave some over as like evidence? Were you planting, because this is a very forensic, very policey thing to leave behind evidence of a crime.
And that was Dad's job. That was his Christmas responsibility.
Dad looks very unimpressed. At what point did you become a Grinch about Christmas, Dad?
Paul, I'm not a Grinch, but I did have this beautiful Christmas music that we used to play every year.
Yeah.
And until I sold the whole collection in a garage sale.
That's the spirit.
Yep. Like I sell everything.
Yeah.
But, and quite often doing shift work, I'd be working, as a police officer or a fireman.
Sure.
Sometimes poor Mum was there by herself.
I'll cut in there for a minute if I may.
Yes.
To say that out of the 21 years that your father was either a full-time like a police officer or full-time fire brigade, I can remember probably maybe three to four Christmas days where he was actually at home for the Christmas morning in all those years. So maybe he was home in the afternoon or maybe he was home the night before, but it was always, you know, that's just how it panned out. But we worked around it.
Yeah,
okay. But he always had the responsibility of eating Santa's cookie. Or in later years it became more sophisticated and it was a fruit mince tart that left out.
At least I like those.
That's right.
But it was very prolonged. It was my job to give out the presents. And I stretched it out for as long as I possibly could until your kids were absolutely just losing it.
And why? Why would you do that?
Well, I just thought it was really good to stretch things out.
Why?
And then I also, at the end of the whole occasion, I would, within minutes, do you recall I used to get rid of the Christmas tree that morning?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Hey, just quickly, we have someone else in the studio here. Tegan Higginbotham, my wife, and the producer and road manager of this fiasco. Tegan, you have been holding something in for the past few minutes about Christmas. I mean, because your family's very Christmassy.
They are. Yeah, look, I mean, I'm really enjoying listening to Christine and John's take on this. But what do you mean you took down the Christmas tree on the morning of Christmas? You psycho.
And all, there was no sign of Christmas within probably half an hour. But it's true, isn't it, Christine?
Yes, you'd pack the tree up, put all the wrapping in the bin and make all the kids put their toys and their presents in their room. So within an hour of the Christmas present opening, there was no visible sign that it was ever Christmas.
You know what? It actually sounds worse now. Talking about it.
Yeah, it's almost like the thing you did was monstrous. You know, what's funny? I remember distinctly, Tegan, I was given a Nintendo Game Boy. I was given it on Christmas morning, and they made me return it the next day. Made me go straight back to Kmart and return it.
Why?
But Mum and Dad, why?
I don't recall that.
Really? You don't remember that? Mum, do you remember why?
Oh, gosh. Gosh, no, I can't remember why.
Okay, here's the thing. I remember why. It's because I played Tetris for 2 hours, and you thought, that's concerning, and so you yanked it off me, put it back in the packaging, and drove it straight back to Kmart to get a refund.
Wow, I don't think we'd do that.
You did do that. You did a whole bunch of stuff.
Don't look at me. I wasn't there.
Oh, God. Paul's obviously scarred.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just think it's interesting how different families have different approaches to Christmas. I do find it very interesting, Tegan, I'm sure you'll agree, that Mum and Dad basically created a Christmas crime scene. Because that's trace evidence, leaving out bits of cookies and bits of milk so we as kids deduce who was there. Mm.
Now, I am very much OCD with cleaning. I clean our apartment floor with methylated spirits.
Sounds
love it.
Yep.
And to leave crumbs on purpose was so traumatic for me, and knowing that I had to leave them overnight, it was just I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, also we're in Sydney, and Sydney has a bit of a problem with cockroaches. Yeah, so basically it was like a big gamble. When do you remember the point where we transitioned from believing in Santa Claus, who for listeners is absolutely real, into not believing in Santa Claus? Mum, Dad, do you remember?
Well, I'd like to say something on that topic, if I may.
Yeah, please.
You being the eldest of three children, and when your young brother was probably about 7 or 8 years old, he'd already worked it out. And your sister, who's a couple of years younger than you, she'd worked it out. But you, whether you'd worked it out or not, you decided you want to be in total denial. No, don't want to know. Don't tell me those things. No, Santa's real. So you prolonged it in your own mind as long as possible till probably you started high school, and you had to then reluctantly you went, oh, it pains me to admit that it's not real, but maybe it is real.
I feel like we should have sat down and had this chat before I married Paul, Christine, because it's explaining so much.
What do you mean? How dare you? Okay, well, Tegan, how old were you when you found out that Santa wasn't, you know?
I'd kind of probably cottoned on at roughly the same age my big sister did, because we'd been discussing a few discrepancies in the Santa stories together. Mm. We'd been, you know, figuring it out, solving the crime. But it was my big sister, Catherine, who brought it to the parents. And I specifically remember it was one Christmas morning. She said to Mum and Dad, "I don't think Santa's real." So they went, okay. And they asked Catherine to come into their bedroom for a chat. And about 10 minutes later, she came out, clearly having been bawling her eyes out, was like, "No, he's true. He's all true." And clearly they'd gone, "Don't tell your sisters." So she was in on the secret. But by then, I think for me, I was already like, why is Santa's handwriting exactly like Mum's? What's with that?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Why does Santa's toys have price tags on it? That doesn't make sense.
Well, I got pulled into a bit of a Christmas thing with you, Mum. My sister Anne, who's the middle of three kids, she got given a Barbie's Fold and Funhouse. And Mum, you grabbed me one evening and you basically, Anne was in bed at this point, and you needed my help building it. Now, it's interesting that I was involved in the building of a toy which was ostensibly apparently from Santa Claus, and yet I still maintained that fiction.
The reason that you probably got pulled into that particular activity was that you were an avid constructor of Lego and Meccano, and you were very good at putting things together. Mm. So I knew that, you know, desperate times, they're desperate measures. So I thought, you know, your father had become a little bit unraveled trying to put together the final details of this pink Barbie motorhome that also had a seat and room for Ken to hang out in with Barbie.
Living
so,
in sin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yes, but maybe that's because I'd come up with a really good plan by that stage of some of the presents were from Santa on the card and some were for Mum and Dad.
Right.
So this was obviously a Mum and Dad present, I imagine.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. So there was a degree of collaboration there, because, Tegan, you mentioned this morning something that your mum used to do that you just remembered regarding presents, about sharing the credit.
Yeah, I think that as we got older, Mum got a bit miffed with having to give Santa all the credit on Christmas morning. So she'd be like, "Oh, no, we helped Santa with this one." The really big presents, Mum seemed to want to, imply that she'd chipped in with Santa Claus, which once again, she was really just breaking the whole illusion. But I think that when Mum and Dad, you know, because we didn't always have the most money in our household, and they really like to go all out at Christmas. So if they put all their savings into getting us a Nintendo 64 or something, they want a little bit of credit, you know? They want a little bit of the love.
No, absolutely. And I mean, because Tegan, you and I and Mum and Dad and your Mum and Dad spent Christmas in London a couple of years back in Notting Hill in an apartment just above the bench that Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts hook up on in the film Notting Hill. And that was like just a pure idyllic white Christmas. But I mean, in the opposite direction, I assume, Mum and Dad, that you both would have seen a fair bit of crime on public holidays, because I read somewhere that there's a lot of emergency room activity on public holidays. Do the two of you remember having dealt with anything on Christmas? Do you remember any Christmas crimes?
Well, I remember that Christmas used to, as it does, Christmas, it seems to have a lot of positive, you know, positive connotations. Of course, it's a celebration, family time, but then it also brings a lot of feelings up, like people that don't have families or they have disagreements with people in the family or whatever. So there can be a very much an escalation in domestic violence around Christmas.
Because you've got alcohol, alcohol and things like that. Plus, a lot of family, quite frankly, do not want to be together, and they come together on that day perhaps to please their parents, no matter how old the siblings are. You know, the kids could be in their 50s, and it's this sort of amalgam of, you know, it's not real. I'm talking worst case scenario. Obviously, there are most families love hanging out, but, you know, there are situations. And then I think funerals as well, where it brings out the best and the worst. I remember a particular story when I was a policeman at Mossman where I had to deliver a death message on Christmas Day.
Whoa.
To a family in Mossman. And I knocked on the door. I was with a female police officer, not your mother. And, you know, they were so excited to see us. And they said, come in, join the festivities. And we went into this beautiful house in Mossman. And there were so many people there. It was a really great occasion. We had to tell them that their 19-year-old daughter had fallen in Europe in an abseiling accident. It was so fucked up.
Oh, my God.
So that's sort of... And then you've got to think about all the emergency service workers across the world, nurses, doctors, paramedics, fireys, police. Think about all those people that are working that day.
Yeah.
And they're away from their family.
Mm.
So they then sort of have little parties and perhaps try and bring family around. Police can't do that. Fireys can. So, yeah, that's the other side.
People at 7-Eleven too. They have to work on Christmas.
Yeah, you're right. It's exactly the same.
It's
exactly the same.
But so they should.
Mum and Dad, you both worked in the emergency services. Did you ever find it difficult to get into the spirit of things, you know, like Christmas or Easter or whatever, you know, like important, apparently fun, celebratory events when in your work days you were dealing with such tragedy? Or did that help you enjoy those things more?
Christine, can you tell them what we used to do down at in Manly with the kids every Christmas? In relation to...
Okay. Well, we used to... actually, I was just talking to someone at my workplace this morning, how she's a qualified psychologist. So she goes off every Christmas and works at Lifeline for half the day with all the calls coming in of people, you know, needing to chat to someone. And we, on a similar note, used to go down to one of the local churches in our area in Manly, and they used to put on a lunch for all of the local people that they could have been homeless. Maybe they had no relatives, no family to spend time with on Christmas Day. They may have just wanted to come along to have company, you know. And so we would take the children from a very early age every single Christmas Day down to help feed, give out the food and the presents and spend time with these people. So that would be 3 or 4 hours of our Christmas Day every year for many, many years. And that was, you know, giving something back to the community. And
also making people, our kids, realise that not everyone was as well off, not financially, just emotionally. And that's really important. And firemen, I know that in Sydney they put a huge, like a Santa Claus decoration on the front of all the fire engines, and they put tinsel and, you know, and kids come round to the station on Christmas Day.
Yeah, you don't want to cast a downer on Christmas Day at all, but the thing is that just to be mindful, I suppose, of all the different sets of circumstances of people, you know, that may have family, but you just don't know what that family situation's like.
And things are going to happen on Christmas Day. There are going to be car accidents.
Yeah.
There are going to be disasters. And what happens on those days is that the media tends to polarise. these things. Like if there's a bushfire happening, it'll be just all that more intense because it's Christmas.
Right. Okay. Okay. It's like the stakes become higher. This does tie into a question actually from Michelle Parry, who asked, are there any Christmas traditions in the stations you both worked for or any funny Christmas stories? At my friend's work, they do Secret Santa and the boss always gets a mankini. I think it's been 5 years in a row. So Mum and Dad, when you were working and stationed at the stations, were there any Christmas traditions that you went through?
Christine?
No, not for me, not that I can remember, apart from having, as soon as you finished the shift, if it was Christmas, you'd go and have Christmas drinks or have a meal or just the standard type of celebration. But being, you know, one of the few women there, maybe there was some sort of tradition that I didn't know about. I don't know.
No.
I see. Yeah. Was there something you were... Okay.
No, but in the fire stations, big time.
Really?
Massive, massive. Someone would be delegated, normally the ladder drivers, because they never get called out. Which was...
Weren't you a ladder driver?
I was.
Okay.
And you'd prepare, you'd put tables together and you'd go hard, and some people even dressed up as, you know, whatever.
I have to admit, this is something that I had forgotten about, but my parents were both CFA when they were living up in the Dandenong Ranges. Mm. And because the way that things go in Australia, summer is Christmas and it is the time that things are burning, the station was always really busy around Christmas time. Mm. And I remember, Paul, one of the first times you went up to the Dandenong Ranges, you met my mum and dad at the station and Santa Claus arrived in the fire truck and, oh boy, was I excited. And this fire truck would go around the hills and people were really excited to see Santa in the fire truck, and it was just the sort of thing that was done every single year.
Yeah, it's a shame reindeer aren't flame retardant. I have a question for all three of you, actually. This is from John Chandler. How is Paul so sheltered and naive? Was it a conscious decision to keep work from him? So I know you're all going to have different. I guess one narrative that's come up throughout this show, Mum, Dad, Tegan, is how different I turned out from you, Dad, and from you, Mum. Why do you think I'm so sheltered and naive?
I don't think you're naive, Paul.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Well, you enjoyed living in this, you had all of our kids, but you especially had incredible, or still have an incredible imagination. So you lived in, not out of touch with reality, but you had your own...
My own reality.
...imagination and fantasy world that you created, or that you, you know, and... I mean, when you were 7 or 8 years old, you'd read Lord of the Rings. Like, you were very advanced as far as reading skills and creativity went. So I think you were just in a different zone. Yeah.
And also we didn't have the TV, and the kids would, particularly Paul and Anne, because they were older, is that they would do a Christmas presentation every year of
The Magic Pudding.
And it was brilliant.
I used to know.
It was
all
verbatim.
Of,
yeah, and it was really good. That's because we deprived our children of TV.
Yeah, if you it was
a social experiment that was very successful.
It's like if you go, you know, if they say if you go blind, your other senses get heightened. So by depriving me of the joy of television, all my other personality traits got ramped up to unhealthy levels. So, Tegan, what about you?
You asking if I think you're naive?
What do you think of my worldview? I mean, looking at Dad and looking at me and looking at how different we are. Like,
you know, we've had a lot of discussions about the fact that I really like the way you like things, which is that you are somebody who is so passionate about the things you love. And sometimes that means that around you, the rest of the world could be on fire and you don't notice it as much.
Well, it is now. Much of it is now. So,
but no, you're a really passionate person and I agree with your dad. I don't think it's naive. But at the same time, I also see that this must have been quite an effort on John and Christine's part, the fact that you did have these incredibly dangerous, traumatic, sometimes, you know, the things you saw would have been really disturbing. And to have these three kids who still lived really happy and... you know, carefree lives that weren't affected by that, I think that would have taken a lot of work on your part.
There you go, John.
Did you just call me John?
No, John Chandler is the one who asked the question.
Fuck.
I'm not one of those guys who calls their dad by their first name. That'd be weird. I got a question here from Kim Smith for Mum and Dad. Is there any piece of parenting philosophy that the two of you put into practice based on your time and experiences in the force?
Most definitely. Christine, you go first.
Out of our three children, we decided, because of lots of different circumstances to do with both of working in the emergency services, the police force, but also with both of our families that were very, very strict, that we thought, you know what, we're not going to have any curfews. We're just going to, you know, let our kids, like, be there to guide them and give them, try and develop a good moral compass. Mm. But not, you know, but let them decide, like let them be in, have a little bit more responsibility for their own actions and make decisions based on sound judgment, which hopefully we instilled into them. And it turned out really well for Paul and his younger sister, Anne. It was a whole different story for our younger sister.
Well, Mark was a rat bag, but so was I as a young kid. Yeah. I was, you know, he's, and my mother's like that too. Some of the horrendous stories my mother's told me about when she was a young kid.
Are you surprised that, mum and dad, are you surprised that none of your kids ended up in the police force or the emergency services?
No.
I don't think any of your kids were ever destined to do that.
Okay.
Ever. But it was very tough. I mean, parenting is a really, really tough gig.
Do you think policing prepared you for parenting?
I think it meant that we always had eyes in the back of our head, right, so to speak.
You could never bullshit to us, ever.
We could just look at you without you even opening your mouth, and we knew exactly what you'd done.
But kids think they're getting away with it. All kids universally think when they tell a lie to their parents, they're getting away with it. All parents know what the kids are thinking. But the parents let a lot of things slide. They don't, just because the parent doesn't say anything doesn't mean they're, it's like with old people. You look at really, really old people and you think, you know what, they're losing their marbles. Maybe some are, but most of them actually, they see everything. They have wisdom. And it's really, it's fascinating. To think that you kids thought, but I thought I could bullshit my father. And he tells me that, you know, he knew.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Anyway.
I got away with some stuff.
I think the emergency services did have an influence in that we were open-minded about a lot of things, but we also were very, very much acutely aware exactly what was happening all the time with our children from a young age and when you were teenagers. And we could, it was like we had this inbuilt radar. We just knew what was happening, and if we needed to intervene, we would. And if it wasn't necessary, we wouldn't. We'd just leave you guys to work it out.
All right, here's a question for the two of you. You've got a daughter-in-law now, Tegan.
Hello.
Do you think Tegan would have made a good cop based on your time with her?
Yes, definitely.
Really? Why?
Well, I think the police force needs more smart women.
Mm.
How does that sound when I said that?
Sounds great.
You sure?
Yeah.
Because that's not implying, I hope, that there aren't enough.
No, I see. I think it sounds nice. It's a lovely compliment.
And also, Tegan's very switched on and savvy and intuitive and could be a great role model.
That's lovely.
For up and coming. I think it's really important to have a diversity within every organisation.
How about you, Mum?
You don't want stereotypical, whatever that may be, I don't know, changes with each decade, but, you know, it's people have this idea about what type of personality you should be to join particular jobs, especially the emergency services. But if someone has a yearning and they want to make a difference in the world and they feel like that's for them, well, then, and they psychologically, like if they tick all the boxes as far as the criteria for joining, well, then great, you know, but you do need, it's like in the police force, you've got people that work in roles in the police force even now where they're not really going out and arresting criminals, but they're helping in the education of young people, or they're mentoring, or there's other roles. There's many, many different areas you can work in. So
that's true. That's very true. Yeah. But I know that Tegan's skills, at least the things she wants to do, involve car chases, disguises, rappelling down buildings. I mean, I believe the two of you have been driven around by Tegan at various points. How would you rate her driving?
Well, we just did that road trip.
We did.
And I would describe Tegan as a... more than competent driver.
Thank you.
That's a, more than competent. That's a glowing compliment from the Vulcan in the room. Just quickly, Mum, do you need to go soon or do you have a few more minutes?
Now, I'm going to sign off because this particular government agency I work for has got some stuff coming up this afternoon that I need to attend to. God, so
that sounds like MI5. That's very cool.
Yeah. Well, I just can't. No more details, but I need to get going any minute.
All right, okay? Mum's loading a grappling hook, and she'll be zipping out of skylight very soon. Yeah, Mum, is there anything else you want to say in closing to the listeners of the show?
I hope everybody has a very safe, happy Christmas, and that wherever all of the listeners are, with family, friends, or on their own, or off, you know, working, whatever you need to do on Christmas Day, it's all okay. It's every Christmas Day. There's no standard measure of what you should be doing or who you should be with or how you should feel. It's another day, and you spend it how you want to spend it, basically.
Christine, I had no idea you were so wise.
Yes, you did.
All right. Love you, Mum. Merry Christmas.
All right. Bye, over and out to everybody.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
That was nice.
Wasn't that great? Okay, so Tegan, you're here on a police podcast.
I know.
Yeah, what have your run-ins with the police been like?
Tegan, will I be upset?
No. No.
Because, you know, we did this road trip. Let's just get this off my whatever.
Okay, go.
Because why is it, Tegan, that every single police station we see, you have this standard phrase you use.
Which one is it?
What's the one about? Just come on, think about it.
Is it?
Because I'll know it. It's like there's the such and such.
Yeah. What do I say again? It's the popo. I call them the popo.
Oh, it's the popo.
No. It's not that. It's the popo. I call them. Okay, so what happened was years ago, I used to go to the football with my dad. That's the thing that we did as our bonding thing. I know you don't like big football stadiums filled with supporters. I do. That's my jam. So my dad and I would go to the football. And one time we're at the game and this police helicopter flew really low over the stadium. And without missing a beat, my dad's looked up and gone, "Pigs in space." And I thought, it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
Wow. You've set your humour bar low, haven't you?
So whenever I see the police, I say, "There's the pig."
Oh,
here's the thing. I actually really love the police, and I've always had really wonderful run-ins with them.
If you've had a run-in, it's
not
been good.
Run-ins, interactions.
Yeah, sure.
I say it from a place of actual, genuine love, because I grew up in a bit of a not a great suburb. The suburb I grew up in was called Dandenong. If you're in New South Wales, I believe the equivalent is, it's kind of like Parramatta,
Blacktown-ish,
kind of that sort of stuff.
Mount Druitt, maybe?
We're going to get letters.
I think in South Australia, I've been told that it's Alexandria or Alexandra, something like that. Anyway, anyway, it was a really, really rough suburb. So much so that I remember after I'd left high school, I was at a pub with a load of other people who just, you know, graduated year 12. And I started reflecting back on all the times that the police officers had visited our schools, you know, for just little lessons about law stuff, like what to do if you get arrested, or what a policeman's badge is called, or, you know, various things about the law.
What do you mean, what a policeman's badge is called?
It's called a five-pointed suppository.
We were told it was called a Freddy, and that we have the right to ask police officers to see their badge if they're trying to arrest us.
Where's your Freddy?
Yeah, where's your Freddy, basically? And all the other kids, which they would have been back then, all the other young people around this table were like, "Excuse me, what do you mean the police came to your school on a regular basis to give you lessons?" And I was like, "You know, when the police come to your school and tell you what to do if you get arrested. And they were like, that doesn't happen at other schools.
No.
And it was just because I went to this really shit school.
Oh.
But, you know, I, from a really young age, had been quite independent. And I'd walk myself to Dandenong train station, which is a really dangerous station, and hop on the train and take myself into the city to do things like do night classes at VCA. And I remember one particular time there was a there was this police officer who was on the platform. I've gotten on the train, and then he got on the train and came and stood near me. And I, by this stage, I was panicking. I thought I'd done something wrong. And he was like, "If it's all right, love, I'm gonna stand next to you for a couple of stops, if that's all right. I just don't like the look of some of the people on this train. And it was then that I looked around and went, "Oh yeah, they're all dodgy." Like
that's
everyone.
Nice of that policeman to do.
And he did that. And so the honest truth is, whenever I've been pulled over, it's been the nicest interactions. I've spoken with a lot of female police officers over the years, and they are, I've got a lot of respect. And for me, police officers have always been a very supportive presence. When I see cops, I have a very positive response. So I, whenever I make fun, it is truly probably because you're in the car, and I like the idea of rubbing you up the wrong way.
Speaking of being in the car,
yes.
How did you find road tripping with Dad and I during the drive from Melbourne to Bendigo to Mount Druitt, Horsham, across to Adelaide? Did you find that particularly interesting? What did you learn from the two of us?
Well, I've learned that you don't know where we went because we certainly didn't drive to Mount Druitt.
Mount Gambier. There was a dormant volcano. It was beautiful.
I actually really enjoyed the road trip. I like driving, and I like seeing a lot of different things in Australia. And I like, you know, you've got, John, very fascinating stories. And I like that there are a lot of things you can't talk about on the podcast because they're either too intense or a little bit contentious or just not okay to share. So I like that I get a lot of those behind the scenes stories as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I thought it was really fun, and I really did like getting to meet so many people along the way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Mum's gone, but Tegan,
what
question.
What do you mean gone?
Well, she left the call.
Yes, but gone sounds rather.
No, gone by like objectively means she's just not here anymore.
She's still around, though.
I was just hit by a thought, though.
Mm.
I know what your mum's job is.
Yes.
Which, you know, we're not saying, but or at least I know what your mum says her job is. But imagine if your mum's a spy.
Ah, well, here's the thing. Growing up, everybody thought my parents were spies because, Tegan, you've got a friend. Okay, so I'm sitting in the schoolyard and people are like, okay, so what does your dad do?
Mm-hmm.
My dad's a garbage man. My dad's an accountant. And I said, well, my dad's a cop, but
did
also.
Did you go to school in Northern England?
Yes, I went to. You know that. You sent me to school in Suffolk. It was lovely. So anyway, I'm in Suffolk. I'm at Suffolk High. And I'm sitting there having to explain to other kids how my dad is a police officer, but also a PI, also a fireman, also worked at a funeral home, and after a certain point, they expected when they came over to the house, you know, where you press a bookshelf and it clicks open and there's guns with silencers and night vision goggles, and everyone thought my dad was a spy. And now,
the irony being that sort of stuff would have more likely been found at my parents' house, because my dad was not a spy. My dad was a painter and decorator.
But was he really a painter and decorator?
I know, right? Because one thing that my dad liked to do...
Yeah. No, don't say liked as if it's in the past tense.
No, he likes to do, you're absolutely right, is build hidden cupboards and secret drawers and things in the house. And, you know, I have an interesting story, I suppose, about Christmas that I can talk about later, but there was an interesting 2-year period in my very, very close family, because we were close, where I'd had a falling out with my parents and we didn't see each other for 2 Christmases, which was a really big deal for us. We can talk about that another time. But one of the times that we all started seeing each other again was during fire season. So it was about this time of the year many, many years ago. And Paul, you were with me and we went up to my parents' house up in the mountains.
May I describe the house?
Yes, please do.
It's set into a hill at about 45 degrees. It's way down a big driveway. It's Tolkien-esque up there. It's like it's like basically a rainforest.
Mm.
So the house is this beautiful multi-story house nestled into the woods, and it's... the fire hazards there are crazy, right?
So you're bad, yeah.
Your mum and dad, obviously, I think I just met them.
And they had gotten in contact, and it was, you know, we weren't at the best place, but they went, look, we need your help.
Mm.
We've both been called out today. They were the CFA, and they'd both been called out on duty or whatever it was called. Dad was some sort of fire captain situation. And they went, we need you to go to the house and get our fire safety box, which is the box that most people in fire-prone areas will know about. It's where you put all your legal documents, all the stuff that you cannot have go up in flames.
How big would you say this thing is?
Well, it fits a lot of A4 documents. I don't know. I'm not really good with sizes. It's a hefty little box.
Sure.
And, you know, you put all your favorite jewelry in there, just stuff like that. I don't know. So they've gone, we need you to swing by the house because the fire rating today is off the charts. Mm. The hills are in a lot of danger and we can't get back to the house. Get the firebox, get the dog and leave. So you came up with me that day and I've walked into my parents' house, haven't been there for a while. It's feeling a bit emotional, a bit strange. And then we go around trying to find the fire safety box. But Dad, in all of his wisdom, has hidden it in a secret cavity in the wall that you had to literally knock on to get the damn thing to open.
It was like if you press on, it was like a gargoyle and you press the eye in and you hear a wet click from a distant recess. It was like, it was Last Crusade bullshit.
So you must have think I'm a nutbag because I'm walking around my parents' house knocking on all the walls trying to find this goddamn box that I know he's hidden somewhere.
Now, here's the thing. I don't think your dad's a spy. I think he's a Christmas elf in disguise.
He is. Well, one of the stories that I love about my dad is, you know, parents do all these wonderful things to convince their children that Santa Claus is real, which he is for any children listening. But one of the great things that my dad used to do is we used to put the letters in the fireplace at Christmas time and the letters would get taken by the fairies to Santa and then we'd get gifts. And what my dad did is every year he would, I don't know, he must have done this very late at night. That's the only time I can imagine he did it. He would tie fishing wire to the letters, thread that fishing wire all the way up the chimney, all the way over the entire roof of the house and down to the lounge room window. And then at the end of that fishing wire, he would tie, I guess it must have been a rock or a stick or something like that.
Or a brick or something.
Something quite heavy. So then when we'd all be hanging out in the lounge room, you know, playing, watching TV, Mum would go, oh, did somebody see the letters move? We'd look at the fireplace, Dad would drop the brick and the letters would shoot up the chimney.
That's wonderful.
It was wonderful because then when we were at school and kids were saying things like Santa's not real, we'd be like, we've seen it.
Do you know what my mum and dad did for Christmas?
What did they do?
They bought a bunch of secondhand toys and threw a sheet over them.
Hang
and
on.
I'd go out that night when they were in bed and I'd then look under the sheet and I would see what I was going to be given, all these secondhand Japanese wind-up toys, because I always wanted a push bike, and I went to this. I'm sure everyone knows I went to a girls' school. No, I did.
What do you mean? I'm sure everybody knows it.
Well, haven't I mentioned
it
before? Are you serious? No, in Armidale, there were no. My parents wanted me to go to a Catholic school, and the bishop said to my mother, who was a teacher, "Well, you'll have
it
to come
like
here
the
and
start
teach."
Start of a joke. The bishop said to me, "Mum."
I know. Anyway. So
a cop walks into a girls' school.
So basically, I went to this girls' school called St. Mary's. I was the first boy. Well, there were a few boys. There's a whole podcast in this. But
I mean, I don't know if there is, but please.
No, there actually is.
Sure, okay.
But I won't go into all the details. Suffice to say that we lived a long way away from the school and everyone had a push bike except me. And then somehow or other, my dad found this, I don't know, 100-year-old push bike made of cast iron. I'd never seen or have never heard of since a cast iron bike. It weighed so much. In kilos in today's weight, I reckon it weighed maybe 40 kilos. And my father, being Dutch, get ready for this, he went and bought some shitty enamel paint and he painted the bike in red, white and blue, the colours of the Dutch and also French flag. And the paint never dried. And I was learning to ride this incredibly. He did, in fairness, he painted it and he did buy a new seat. But everything else on it was pretty rat shit. And the exciting thing about the bike was that on a Friday afternoon, and I'm only maybe 6 or 7 years old, you got to ride out to the sports ground.
Yeah.
And everyone comes out to the bike racks. I could feel the adrenaline pumping through my little veins.
I think that was probably just the lead-based paint, but anyway.
True, true, true. Anyway, I went to hop on my bike and I de-nutted myself as the chain came off.
Oh, jeez.
And my testicles just smashed onto the crossbar.
Is this how you ended up at a girls' school?
And then I had to push this bike home. And on the way home, I found there was a rope on it because I used to go over this rickety old bridge.
Uh-huh.
And I pulled the rope up and it was full of cats that someone had drowned.
Your upbringing sounds absolutely horrifying.
Isn't that terrible?
Okay, so that's much worse than my I didn't get a Game Boy for more than a day story.
Yeah, yours didn't end in dead cats.
No, and they very rarely do. Tegan, what's your most disappointing Christmas story?
Well,
just to make everyone at home who's listening on Christmas Day feel better if their Christmas isn't going too great.
All right, honestly, yep. Okay, there's the funny ones, which is where we would literally hide from our extended family, like hide behind the couch, duck down, don't make noise because we hated them. So we would just pretend to be out of the house.
That's great.
Which you could never do because back then most families had one car. We certainly did. Dad's car is clearly in the front. We're clearly home.
Sure.
But we would get down and hide because...
Wait, the whole family? Adults too?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, your parents are the size of thimbles, so that works.
But no, honestly, a few years ago, it was the 2 years before I met you, when I wasn't speaking with my family anymore. They were rough Christmases because to go from a family where Christmas was everything, we were a Christmas household, to then spending those 2 years by myself, it was really tricky. And I know that there could be a lot of listeners who are going through that. And the interesting thing about Loose Units is you guys have a clearly wonderful relationship. And I get to see a few of the people who write messages who say how remarkable it is that you guys get along so well. And I know it isn't always like that for every family all the time. So, you know, just I've been through that Christmas where it's a little bit shitty, but I hope that for other people, like it did for me, it can mean that in the future when things get better, they're so much better than they were before.
Yeah.
And it's in a really, really great place. Really upset that my family had a rough couple of years. But we needed to because we figured so much out in that time.
But I mean, your parents have an outlook on Christmas, which is amazing. And between the, like, because now I've got in-laws who have shown me this whole other side of Christmas. Like,
my dad is, it's just his favorite time of the year.
It's crazy.
When he is that sort of person who drives around scouting out all the other neighbors' light situation because he needs to have the best lights in the neighborhood. Full Christmas. Yeah, definitely.
And, I figured. Listeners have sent in some really great Christmas questions, and seeing as how the three of us are just sitting here sipping on some eggnog, how is it, by the way?
It's lovely.
Yeah, Dad, how's your eggnog?
I haven't had any eggnog yet.
It's right there. Have a sip of eggnog.
Okay, it looks... Wow.
Eggy.
Looks like water.
It's fucking eggnog. Don't break the Christmas magic. Sorry. I'm getting you an imagination for Christmas. Here we go. Okay, so here are some quickfire questions for all of us, okay? Shirley Cole asked, what is Santa going to bring me? I'm hoping, Shirley, that it's a copy of Loose Units in bookstores right now. Tegan, what do you think Shirley's going to get for Christmas?
The first thing that popped into my head was lingerie. I'm so sorry, Shirley. I don't know. There's just something about Shirley that sounds a bit like, hey, Shirley, have some lingerie. I don't know.
Dad, what do you think Shirley's getting for Christmas?
Is this what Shirley's getting?
Yeah, what do you think Shirley's getting?
That's what Shirley wants to know.
I thought it was what I was getting.
It's not always about you, Dad.
No. Well, Shirley, I don't know you. And I don't know how old you are.
Okay.
But have you ever considered taking up magic as a hobby?
Oh, like you mean like illusion?
Not illusion.
Not conjuring flames from the ether.
No, but maybe some a packet of card tricks.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Think she wants the lingerie, but anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know, you know, a lot about you.
Tegan's right. And of course, Dad, as some listeners will know, but not many, some listeners will know that Dad is quite a fan of sleight of hand and of magic tricks. Yeah. I was in LA a couple of weeks back with my friend Josh, who was a member at the Magic Castle, which is a Gothic castle, turn of the century, where basically you have to be a magician to enter. Or a friend of a magician. And if you're a member, you have to have actually auditioned for like the Magician's Guild or whatever. So we rocked up in my friend's replica DeLorean from Back to the Future with the Mr. Fusion on the back in three-piece suits, got ushered into a tunnel and spent the night jetting around this beautiful old building checking out magic. And the first thing that Josh said was, John would love this. So next time you're in LA, maybe we can record an episode from the basement of the Magic Castle.
Lovely.
Michelle Nichols asks, Dad, have you ever arrested Santa?
Michelle, something a bit spooky.
Oh.
I have just come back from Auckland. I had to go over there to hand deliver some paintings, exceptional paintings, might I add.
Santa hand delivers things too.
Yeah. So when I got off at the airport in Auckland, I saw something that I've never, ever seen in my life. And it was actually at the airport, a very, very creepy Santa Claus.
Really?
With kids on his lap. And he looked... Oh, look, it freaked me out. So, yeah, I thought that was weird to have at an airport.
Oh, like a department store Santa at an airport?
Yeah.
How do you know it wasn't, like, just some guy in a Santa costume? Like, well, okay, what kind of...
He was sitting down and people were... It was a bit weird.
That's a bit weird.
I mean, you know, you get off a plane, you're all excited and there's this... And he looked a bit odd. I thought he was very, very tall and a bit... I checked him out pretty thoroughly.
Sure.
You know, with my sort of my suspicious glasses on.
Yep.
But so how do we get onto that?
Well, Michelle's asking is, have you ever had cause to arrest Santa Claus?
Well, I probably would have questioned this guy.
Really?
Maybe.
Okay. But you've never arrested someone dressed as Santa?
Not at Christmas, no.
But like... That's cryptic. Yeah. All right. Well, here we go.
But there have been some very dodgy Santas over the years. Yes. Like, scarily so.
Yeah. It's kind of
a good... Let's face it. If you're a Santa and you like kids, or let's just step back from that and go, if you like kids and it's Christmas,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a great thing. You could just dress up as Santa. And maybe have nothing under your suit.
Okay. All right. Yep.
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 That's sorry. Really... I mean, we are working towards the end Christmas of the episode. It's a
special. This is sorry. Why I can't be on any of the episodes, because I'd be like, all right, that's enough, John.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Paul Dunn asks, what are some of the dumbest excuses you've been given while pulling someone over or questioning them in the street, Santa or not?
Wow, that's a very interesting question.
Your eyes just went very wide.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of a specific person, or do you find that routine traffic stops just sort of blurred into one for you?
Well, I guess if you're in the highway patrol, you'd get all the cliched things like, oh, it was orange.
Sometimes it is, though. That's
no,
it.
You're right. But that's a whole nother.
Mm.
Yeah.
We won't go there.
Oh, here's a question that's interesting, and maybe we can put this to bed once and for all. Bruce Brownlee wants to know what the joke was. Now, Just to bury this once and for all, Dad, could you please give, as a Christmas present, please let's close this episode out with you giving our listeners the ultimate present, revealing what the joke was.
Now, was it the one about the...
Yes.
Okay, so there's this guy, I saw him this morning at the airport.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Sitting next to Santa.
That's strange.
And he had a lettuce leaf sticking out of his ass. Am I allowed to say ass at Christmas? Anyway. He's got this lettuce leaf sticking out of his ass, and I actually walked up to him and said, are you aware that you've got a lettuce leaf sticking out of your ass? And he just turned around to me and he said, it's the tip of the iceberg.
It's just the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah. Because an iceberg is a type of lettuce.
No, I know. I get it. Anyway, Merry Christmas, listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this very festive, very strange, guest-filled, wonderful, magical Christmas episode of Loose Units. We hope you're having an absolutely incredible day. Please be safe, be happy, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Loose Units, the podcast. Say bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.